Well, good evening, good evening, good evening. I'm so glad to see you tonight. I know people are joining online as well, and folks are rolling in here as we get settled in for Bible class tonight in the 14th chapter of Acts. This continues to be such a significant and important place for us to study. There is a little verse here tonight that we're going to want to give some attention to. And then there's another one of those places where Luke just doesn't tell us everything we want to know. Certainly don't want to tell the Lord how to do heaven, but if in heaven it is such a thing as we get to sit down and talk to Paul or talk to Luke, maybe have a cup of coffee and visit about some things, there's just a number of places where I would like to ask Luke, so was that a miracle or was that not a miracle? So in Luke's gospel, in Luke the 4th chapter, Jesus is nearly thrown off a cliff by the folks in Nazareth. They're mad at him. And it says he passed amongst them. And they don't throw Jesus off a cliff. You knew that part, didn't you? Okay. How did Jesus like miraculously pass between? How did that work? Or maybe you're familiar at the end of Acts 8. The Ethiopian man went on his way rejoicing and he saw Philip no more. What does that mean? Philip get beamed up? Or does that mean Philip went around the corner? It's just not clear. And there's one of those little situations here where we're just not entirely sure. Just not entirely sure, but it probably is not going to make or break your salvation. So I didn't want you to be too worried about that. But it is a point to think about. Right after that, there's a really significant verse that we will want to give particular attention to, because that will make a difference in your salvation. So let's get ready to think about the 14th chapter of Acts, and let's see if we can start in a word of prayer. Would you pray with me, please? Oh Lord our God, we are thankful for this quiet place. We're thankful for the convenience of it and the comforts we enjoy here. We ask now, Father, you would bless our attentions to turn our minds and hearts to your word. Help us to see what your Spirit has recorded here by your servant Luke's hand. Help us to understand better what your servants Paul and Barnabas were doing. Help us to open our hearts to become more like them as they imitate your Son. And as always, Father, we ask that you bless every teacher and student right now, and particularly that you would bless our shepherds here. It's in Christ that we pray, and amen. So as you are looking at the 14th chapter of Acts, we are continuing in this missionary journey, and we've been visiting along in these cities, and we've seen some exciting things that have happened along the way, and we're in this Iconium Lystra Derbe section here. Let me see if I can grab that. There's an outline for you. So we're along at Lystra, and we talked at length. Good conversation last week. Would encourage you to take a look at that online on our Facebook page or at justchristians.com. Good conversation last week from verse 17, from the sermon here that Paul preaches, where he talks about the goodness of God. We bring you verse 15. We bring you good news that you should turn from these vain things to a living God, who made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them. In past generations, he allowed all the nations to walk in their own ways, yet he did not leave himself without witness. For he did good by giving you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons and satisfying your hearts with food and gladness. It's just a marvelous sermon that emphasizes the goodness of God. And we thought about that and talked about that evangelistically some last Wednesday. Note, please, that now I'm fixing to ask you a really hard question, because we pick up now in verse 18. Even with these words, they scarcely restrained the people from offering sacrifice to them. So you're looking at these verses 8 to 18. Paul and Barnabas show up, they do a major miracle, and people are losing it. Just coming unwound. You are the gods. Your gods, they want to offer a sacrifice. We're going to have a big barbecue right here, bringing out garlands, verse 13. I don't know what higher level can you get at than somebody saying, you are divine. That's about the biggest, that's top shelf right there. Okay, going to ask you a hard question. Verse 19, Jews came from Antioch and Iconium, some of these guys coming about 100 miles, okay? And having persuaded the crowds, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing that he was dead. So here's the hard question. How did they go from, hey, we're not Zeus Olympian gods, okay, but that's how you're treating us, to people throwing rocks at them? How did that happen so fast? That is, now, and someone's going to say, well, some Jews from Antioch and Iconium persuaded them. Thank you. Thank you very much. I read that too. But I'm thinking, I'm a Lystraite, a Lystrine. Waited all day for that one. How many of you from out of town? If I'm from Lystra, and these guys have done this miracle, so I'm all about the Olympus gods and all of that. Okay, now I'm trying to moderate that, and I'm trying to hear what they're saying about Jesus. But some people show up from 100 miles away, and they're all like, you know what, these are evil men. You should kill them. No, I don't think so. I mean, they helped this guy. And it isn't that we were saying, your good preachers tell us more, and they said, you know, hey, we're gods. Treat us like gods. No, we actually were all the, you're the gods, and they were ratcheting that down. They were demonstrating humility. So, I don't know if I'm going to accept this Messiah, Jesus of Nazareth thing, but I'm not throwing rocks at them. I mean, come on, these are not bad men. In the scarce few words, verse 18 to 19, they go from divine honors to being murdered. How is that possible? Someone help me with that? Somebody? Anybody? What do we think? What do we think? John Karenick, please, sir. So maybe John says maybe they set themselves up to be gods and they're not gods. They're fakers, they're charlatans, or, you know, kind of going in that particular direction. Maybe the other thing to be said about this is that at Lystra there are a bunch of Gentiles, and now Jews come, verse 19, this makes it even all the more surprising. Because the Jews come and they're chirping, and you would think Gentiles would be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, you people don't even like us. You're always with your superiority business. So, verse 19 is just wildly improbable. How did that happen? Larry York?
I get the impression that the Gentiles over there, excuse me for saying, this, but they rather shallow. They're easily persuaded.
So the people of Lystra, Larry says, he's a little worried that he's offending them. They're dead. They don't know. Okay. They seem shallow. They just jump in this, must be the gods. Then they jump into the next thing that shows up. Maybe that's playing a role here. Billy, what do you think? Okay, that's a fair question. Billy asked how much time between those verses, and we don't know. It would take them a while to get there. They're walking because probably all the flights were booked and they couldn't get a plane, so they're walking the 100 miles. So how long is that taking you? If you're footing it, you know, that's a week, maybe more. So there is some time there. It was not in the next 5 minutes, but it was not. It's not so much time that people are like, oh, I'd forgotten about that miracle. I mean, that's still kind of in the news, isn't it? What do you think, Billy? Okay, so maybe some different people here are being swayed. Maybe some different people. But, Billy, not to make life difficult for you, but I want the people who thought that they were the gods, I want them to jump up and say, hey, put your rock down. These are good people. These are good people. And the sense seems to be that they persuaded the crowds, verse 19, seems to be that, like, this is a wholesale you know, kind of a mob sort of thing. I'm not sure that I can give you definitive answers or that there is a definitive answer except to say this. It is the work of the devil. And the devil is good at what he does. And the devil, I wonder if maybe some of that Jewish snobbery causes them to say, sometimes when people look down on you and treat you as lesser, and then they come along and they persuade you and they say, we need you and come with us and be enlightened like us, that can be very, very appealing. Oh, finally, we're getting some status with these people. Oh, I see now what you're saying about these guys. Maybe there's an appeal there to that, but the crowds are changed here, and it just proves that error can get going in a hurry. Error can get rolling in a big hurry, and the tide can change. I'm going to push a little bit further here because I really want to spend some time in verse 23. So let me. I see some other ideas here, but I think largely there's some speculation here. I just wanted to call attention that it is a surprising turn of events. Notice then that they stone Paul and drag him out of the city, and the language there reminds us of Stephen. Stephen is stoned. And Stephen is dragged out of the city in the same kind of fashion. So the one who persecuted Stephen, who held the clothes of those who destroyed Stephen, now is treated like Stephen. And once again, Luke has paralleled Stephen and Paul. Once again, we are thinking of Stephen in the life of Paul. And now they are supposing that he was dead. And when the disciples gathered about him, he rose up. Okay, Luke, was he or was he not? Was he dead? Or did they just suppose he was dead because he was really, really beaten up? I'm not sure that we're coming to an answer on that. It seems in many ways as if he was in fact dead, but I don't think the text here is definitive. Paul does mention this, by the way, twice. Twice. This was a big deal to Paul, and I do think sometimes when we look at some of the physical things that happened to Paul, we just kind of gloss over that. Stoning is done with large stones intended to crush you. And I can't even imagine what that would be like to have people chunking huge rocks at you. You know, there's all the concussion discussion today in the NFL and so forth and so on. What has happened to Paul's body that people literally threw rocks and attempted to crush him, attempted to kill him, and thought that they had succeeded? We had a gravel parking lot at the church that I grew up in, and parents, if they said one time, they said 100 times, don't throw rocks, which meant, because children understand parents so well, that was their way of saying, you should. And we threw rocks all the time, much to our parents' chagrin. And every now and then, you know, you'd hit a kid pretty good and he'd bleed and squall, and then there'd be trouble and so forth. But I've been hit by a rock, you know, a piece of gravel, and it is not pleasant, okay? Somebody's throwing something big enough to put a hand, fill a hand, that would be devastating. Someone's throwing this kind of rock at you, usually a place of stoning is a depression, and the men stoning stand above you and throw down. What does Paul look like in verse 20? He's a mess. He's a pulp. He rose up and entered the city. And so on the next day, he went on with Barnabas to Derbe. That's a distance of about 60 miles. Someone's going to ask what happened to Barnabas when Paul was being stoned, and we don't know. We don't know. Maybe Barnabas run faster. I don't know. It's a good illustration. Verse 20, they left. They left. Paul's not going to try to make a stand here and just get himself into more difficulty. I've known brethren sometimes that just invited persecution by their belligerent way of presenting the gospel or their inappropriateness in presenting the gospel. In the middle of a workday, stopping everybody in the workplace and preaching the gospel, and then they get fired and they say, oh, I'm so persecuted. No, you're not persecuted, you're just not very wise. Paul shows some wisdom here. Fred?
Unnecessary.
Well, there certainly. Yeah, Fred is right. I mean, there's two groups here. There's the haters and there's the disciples. I mean, you're absolutely right. There is a church here, and they have established a church here, and we'll come back to that church, and we'll talk more about that. But Fred is correct that not everybody in Lystra is a bad person. Some of the people in Lystra are Christians. Think about this. Paul and Barnabas is leaving. They're staying. They're staying. You preach the gospel in Lystra, people throw rocks at you. They're staying. Steve? It's a good observation. These guys come from, you know, down the road, and so maybe they're saying, hey, this guy was a troublemaker in our city. Maybe they're using that against him. Maybe so. It does seem that Paul is the chief speaker in some ways here. I don't know. Maybe while I'm asking Luke what happened to Paul, one of you would want to ask, hey, Barnabas, what were you doing? When they preached the gospel then, verse 21, to that city, and had made many disciples. Look at the gospel triumphing even over persecution. The message of the gospel is so powerful, even when people know that their physical safety is going to be risked, people still become disciples. So they returned to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch. Okay, so we're going backwards here, doubling back through these towns where there has been all kinds of trouble, all kinds of difficulty. I would have thought when we got here that we would just get to the coast and go home. Okay? And someone says, well, I don't see a road there. More to the point, when you're in Derby, there is a really good road that runs to Tarsus. And Derby is at the pass in the mountains that run right down here. You just go right through that pass, and Paul would be home. It's about 150 miles. You think about what Paul has endured. He could go home. Somebody there, nursing back to health, pat him on the back. I mean, he's been in Tarsus for a while. There's probably brethren there, maybe his parents. Don't know everything about Tarsus. You ever get close to home and you think about, you know, well, we could go sightseeing this day, but boy, you know, you get close to home, you just want to go home, sleep in your own bed. Paul could go home. He doesn't go home. Goes back to the cities where there are churches. Why? Because we're going to strengthen the souls of the disciples. We're going to encourage them, verse 22, to continue in the faith. And we're going to tell them that through many tribulations we must enter the kingdom of God. So, persecution is part and parcel of New Testament Christianity. Paul always has great concern for these churches he has planted. He prays for them. He writes letters to them. He sends people to help them. He personally will visit them. And then here there's personal instruction. There's the ministry of strengthening them. There's the ministry of encouraging them. All of this is about establishing and fortifying new converts and new congregations. Notice part of that is telling them the truth. You walk with Jesus, you'll be persecuted. Verse 22 is an important passage because it reminds us it's never enough to get people in the water. When they come out of the water, what do we need to do? We need to strengthen and encourage them. We need to fortify them so that they can face persecution. That's a huge part of things. Paul and Barnabas are risking their lives to go back to these places where the bad guys of verse 19 came from and try to help the disciples. It's a very, very impressive passage. And I think this passage says something here about teaching and training New Testament Christians how to be a New Testament church. Governing structure, verse 23, how to worship, the work of the church, all of those kinds of things. We haven't been anywhere long enough to get all of that grounded. And so we're going to do that. And so verse 22 helps us see the importance, not just of evangelism, but of edification. And sometimes churches get real evangelistic and they get a lot of people in, but they don't close the back door. They don't do verse 22, and people just stream right through the baptistry, get wet, and they're here for a little bit, and then on they go, because we're not doing enough strengthening and encouraging and helping them deal with the realities of day-to-day Christianity and the tribulations that we face. Look what part of that is, verse 23. When they had appointed elders for them in every church, with prayer and fasting, they committed them to the Lord in whom they had believed. So there you go. There's the passage that I really want to give some attention to. I want us to think about elders. James, will you turn on the magic whiteboard for me? Which I must tell you, we think is really going to work. You know what's working? It's Wednesday. So the magic whiteboard takes Sundays off. He goes to church on Sundays, so you can't have that. But on Wednesdays, it's here. So I need us to think about elders, because we don't see a lot in the book of Acts about elders, and in fact, they're mentioned a couple of times in some salutations, and then of course, major mention in Timothy that we've just been reading, and we'll read in Titus, a mention in Hebrews, a mention in Peter, in 1 Peter 5, but there's not tons and tons and tons about elders. You know, a whole book about elders or anything like that. There's just a couple of mentions, and this is one of the more significant mentions. So as you're looking there at verse 23, tell me, what are we learning here in verse 23 about elders? What do you see in verse 23? What would we say here? Miss Jenny, what do you think? So what Jenny gets at here is maybe one of the questions that comes out. Okay, so how do we get elders so quickly? How do we get elders so quickly in these congregations? And maybe part of that would be elders look kind of like maybe some of the offices that were in a synagogue. And if you had a Jewish believer, a Jewish man becomes a Christian, he knows his Bible and is able to learn and so forth and so on. We don't know, as Billy pointed out, exactly how much time is in between verses 18 and 19, and we don't know how much time in verse 21, 22. Verse 22, it's not like they were 5 minutes in each of those cities, so some time has gone by, but I think it's extremely important for us to notice you can get elders. You can get elders. And in a relatively short period of time, men were able to qualify themselves to serve as shepherds of the local flock. And I will say this, for a church to be in existence then, 25, 35, 55 years, and never have had elders, says something is dramatically wrong. Part of the pattern of New Testament Christianity is that a local church has shepherds, and that is not an impossible task. So if we're not getting to there, then we would want to, we need to figure something out. What's going on here? Why aren't men able to do what happened here in a relatively short period of time? What happened there? Maybe we're doing the qualification thing wrong. I think I've known sometimes brethren that read the qualifications to make disqualifications. We just get out a giant magnifying glass and we just keep looking long enough and we can find, look right there. You think he's patient enough? I mean, really. I remember 18 years ago, that one time. And the next thing you know, nobody can be an elder in that kind of situation. Men were able to qualify. Fred Barnes.
At this point in time, gifts are still available. And the knowledge to be an elder requires knowledge of God. And these men could be given gifts of external knowledge of God.
That's an excellent observation. So there are spiritual gifts. And when we think of spiritual gifts, we think of tongue speaking and healing. But there are spiritual gifts, like the spiritual gift of knowledge. That would help a man to know the things that he ought to know. That said, you know, we just got through in 1 Timothy 3. The qualifications in, you know, there's no Bible knowledge. I mean, he can't be a novice. But it's not like there's 20 questions there and, you know, spell Isaiah. It's not a Bible quiz. He has to be without reproach. That's at the top and the bottom of the list. And then there's a bunch of personal qualities. I'll go you, though. I think the spiritual gifts would help here. Phil, how much you think? I, 100%, if men want to do this, they can get there. There's some family qualifications. Obviously, a man could want to serve as an elder, but if he's not married, that isn't something he can probably get and have faithful children in the next 5 minutes. Can't get there like that. But if the family qualifications, if we can get that worked out, the other characteristics we can put in our lives if we want to do that. And sometimes men don't want to do that, because I think they're not as spiritually mature as they ought to be. The opportunity to serve God and to serve God's people in an amazing and important way. Sometimes, let's tell the truth, sometimes a congregation will make it where nobody wants to do it. Because the elders get beat up and harassed and attacked and criticized. And you know, if you're going to go through that process, they are going to get out that giant magnifying glass and scrutinize you. And just going to be misery. And someone says, I want no part of that. So there's two sides of that. The man's got to want it, but the church has got to want it. The church has got to want it. Maybe we ought to think about that. Why here? So verse 23 is telling us some things about elders. How does that fit in the context of what's going on here? Why does Luke tell us about elders here? Lisa? So elders are a key part of a church being strengthened and encouraged and continuing in the faith. Maybe one of the difficulties sometimes that we've had with elders is that brethren think elders have a building key and they set the thermostat. And when we think of elders in those kinds of terms, I mean, just how important are they? Besides, I'd have to give up my building key. You know, I kind of like having one, and I like setting the thermostat where I want it, okay? But elders here are seen as shepherds who are going to help brethren persevere in difficult circumstances, who are going to teach and help them be strengthened and encouraged to continue in the faith. If a church doesn't have elders, I thought about this so much in Timothy. There's all these problems going on in Ephesus, and a huge part of Paul's answer to the problems at Ephesus is, we just need godly leaders. Which means the people in Ephesus should have been saying, wow, we have got problems. We need to get some godly men to lead us. We need some elders here. That would help me get to heaven. That's what brethren need to be thinking about. Oh, the church doesn't have elders? Who would watch for my soul? Wow, could we get some? I'm trying to get to heaven. I need all the help I can get. Could we get some elders in here? Because elders strengthen and encourage. I need all the strengthening and encouraging I can get. This is seen as enormously significant for the staying power of these churches. Doc? I think that's exactly right. And those of you who are streaming at home, Doc, who serves as one of our shepherds, says maybe there's more urgency here because of the persecution and things that Paul has gone through. And I'm certainly not disagreeing. I think there is urgency here. But what I would say about that is, while nobody is throwing rocks, and I'm good with that. I'm not. Don't go out and find rock throwers. I'm okay with that. I'm really okay with that because I'm the guy doing a lot of preaching and teaching. I would say this. I haven't noticed that the devil's retired. Why is there not the same urgency? Okay, so we have some rights by our laws and so forth, and we're not harassed in that kind of way, and that's a tremendous blessing by God. But the devil is still active. Do we not need strengthening and encouraging? We need strengthening and encouraging. I'm going to say again, a church that doesn't have elders, the people in that congregation ought to be freaking out. We need to get some people in here, some men in here, who can do 22, because I'm trying to get to heaven. And it's hard. Even though they're not throwing rocks, I want some elders in here to help me get there. Aaron, what do you think? What a great observation. Wasn't just an optional thing. Hey, you all can have, it's not for every. No, every church. We appoint elders for them in every church. Thank you so very much. This is part of the New Testament plan. Churches that don't have elders are not in accordance with the New Testament plan. And there should be urgency about that. John Karenik? I think that's very, very well put. I'm not looking at any of these churches and thinking there are 500 people. And we don't have numbers here, but nobody is looking at these churches and thinking these are mega churches. But still, even in smaller groups, they are finding men to do this. I think it continues to go back to, we need this. I think part of it is, every church should have this. I think they're being instructed by an apostle. This is what we must do. And I think in light of the persecution, it's necessary to get that foundation set here. Billy? I appreciate that, Billy. Billy notes that this is not the local churches running through all of this. When they had appointed, verse 23, Paul and Barnabas do this, and Paul is an inspired man. So what Fred said about spiritual gifts functions here as well. Paul would know who can and cannot and the things that go with some of that. Go again. And that's true. Timothy and Titus are sent and told to appoint those elders, and that is true. And maybe as we think a little bit more, we're coming to reading in Titus, we can talk a little bit more about that. Maybe the thing that I would say here is some of us are going to ask Luke, was Paul really dead? Some of us are going to ask Barnabas, and where were you? And some of us are going to say, what did that process look like in verse 23? Because the Bible doesn't give specifics about that process, about how that is done, and that sometimes has been a sticking point about how exactly to get from point A to point B. The difficulty, we talk about this a lot in the preaching conference every year, because a lot of those young men who come to the preaching conference, they are preaching in Lystra, Iconium, and Derbe in small churches, and they're trying to get there. They're trying to get elders installed, and that's very complicated and difficult. Once you have them, you can get more because the elders oversee the process. They oversee everything that's going on. So the elders can oversee getting some more and how we're going to do that and the best and most expedient way to do that in accordance with the Scriptures. But the first run is, yeah, it's complicated. It's complicated and harder to do, particularly if people don't want it. I just really want to stress out of that. I see a bunch of hands, and those of you who didn't get to speak, I want you to notice, the guys who did get to speak, they're elders. Yeah, there's not a lot of perks, but when we're talking about elders and having elders and what elders do and getting more elders, the elders get to speak. Isn't that a good idea? Rusty's an elder. What do you think, Rusty?
I think another key here is you appoint elders, plural. And every time we run into elders in the New Testament, it's a plurality. I'm a lousy elder by myself. With the other six guys, I can do this job.
That's a great observation. And honestly, Rusty, I really thought that would be the first thing that we would say, that would be at the top of the list, because we use this passage to establish the plurality. I'm kind of tickled that we said some other things and worked some other things, but it is certainly a big piece of this. You don't have just one. There's not a bishop in charge of the city. There's not a bureaucracy being installed here, denominational networking being set up. There's none of those kinds of things. There's independent local churches, and each of them has their own eldership that's shepherding the flock of God among them. And there's more than one guy doing that. And the reality is, I get to work very closely with our elders, and I'm always amazed at the wisdom of God's plan in many, many circumstances and many, many times. One guy will say this, and then a couple of other guys will say, but you know, what about this? And you just have more godly men in the room, a better solution, a better idea is put forth and worked. Whereas if one person, the preacher, was doing things, it would be an absolute debacle. Okay, kids are starting to trickle in because the guy who's teaching this Bible class is talking too long about verse 23. That is a crazy great verse. If you have more to say about that, we can say more about that next Wednesday night, and we'll push in to chapter 15. We'll push into chapter 15 because Paul and Barnabas have been gone a long time and they need to go home. And so we're going to get them home, and when we get home, there's going to be controversy. We'll talk about chapter 15 next time. Everybody, I appreciate your comments very much, and I appreciate what the elders had to say tonight very, very much. What a key verse that really is. What a blessing to study that this evening. Thanks, everybody.